No. So I thought it would be neat to do a study on how to do a character study, and this is just stuff that I've kind of picked up. I never really got taught how to do it. A lot of what I would learn is I would watch, like, how Bob did a character study, and then I'd be like, well, how did he get that? And kind of, what's the word? Reverse engineer it. Kind of break it down, like, find out, well, how did he get that? How did he get this? How did he arrive at this? And break it all down. Then when you get it all done, then you put it all back together. Okay, okay. And then see what kind of develop what kind of works for you. But so here's what I got. Jesus never met a blind man that didn't walk away with his sight restored. He never met a deaf man that didn't walk away being able with the ability to hear again. He never met a crippled man that didn't leave without the ability to walk. I was going to say walk away, but that didn't really fit. But he never met a leper that didn't walk away cleansed of his leprosy. He never met a maniac that didn't walk away with his ability to reason again, having been restored. When Jesus met the outcast, when he met the unwanted, the undesirable, the unwelcome, he took them and brought them back and restored them to the fold. When Jesus met the brokenhearted, they went away. After having been with Jesus, they walked away comforted, healed, and made whole again. When he ran to the dead, they came away revived, refreshed, and resurrected. So what he did, Jesus Christ, was what he did with people is he provided what was missing. And when I look at a character study, I'm looking for basically what's missing in this person. When I look at a crowd, I think, what's missing? When I look at my own life, I say, okay, what's missing? Because we're supposed to be more and more like Jesus Christ every day of our lives. So, obviously, none of us are there yet, or you'd be Jesus Christ. So you have to ask yourself, you have to look deep inside, examine yourselves, prove yourselves, know yourselves, and ask yourself, what's missing? Where am I not like Jesus Christ? Because those are the areas you got to work on. So when it comes to doing a character study, within the life of the person, you want to first of all determine what's missing in their life. Where do they not line up? What needs to grow? What needs to be changed? What needs to be made closer to Jesus Christ? And so one of the things you want to look at in establishing that is, what are their strengths? What are their weaknesses? And I got a few examples, and you know, I could literally just run all night with examples, but I didn't want to just, you know, kill you with that. But I looked at it, and these are going to be brief. They're not. We'll probably be here 10 minutes tops. If you believe that, I'll tell you another one. But the first one is Naaman in 2 Kings 5:1-15. It talks about the captain of Syria's host, and his name is Naaman. He was an honorable man. The Bible says, you know, he talks about how he was a great leader. He was a decorated warrior, and but then verse 1, at the very end of verse 1, it talks about how great he is, and then he says, but he was a leper. He was a great leader, decorated warrior. He had a lot going for him. He was the captain of Syria's host, but he was a leper. And we know from Leviticus 13 that leprosy is a picture of sin. Leprosy it's contracted by prolonged exposure to unclean living conditions, which is how you get sin in your life. You stay around unclean people, you stay in unclean environments, you stay around anything unclean, and it's going to rub off on you. And that's how leprosy gets in your life in a physical sense, and that's how sin gets in your life on a spiritual sense. So that's Naaman. And you could, you know, there's a little concise little character study of this guy. And like Ruckman's got a good sermon about him, how an army captain got saved. And it's a picture of his salvation, how he came as a leper, but he healed his leprosy. And that healing of that leprosy, that's a picture of a sinner getting saved, getting their sins forgiven, getting their sins cleansed and washed with the blood of Christ. So that's one example. You see his strengths, you see their weaknesses, you establish that, and then we'll look at some more questions later on how to make it more applicable. But the next guy I want to look at is Zacchaeus, Leviticus 19, 1 through 10. He was a tax collector. The Bible's word for that is a publican. His weakness was his height. The children's song goes, Zacchaeus was a wee little man was he. He climbed up into a sycamore tree. What?
Did you mean Matthew? You said Leviticus.
Luke. I'm sorry.
Okay.
Yeah,
sorry.
I'm sorry.
Sorry about that.
Thank you. No, I thought I said Luke. Okay, Leviticus. Yeah, not Leviticus. Luke 19.
Okay.
Talks about the wee little man. And he climbed up into a sycamore tree for the Lord he wanted to see, and the song goes on and on. But the funny part about this whole thing is his strength came from an overcompensation for his weakness. He was a wee little man, but you know, you ever notice that? You get to watching people and studying people, you'll notice the toughest guys aren't always the big tall guys. It's usually the little guys, little short guys. Those are the ones you got to worry about. They got that, you know, what's the Napoleon syndrome or short man syndrome, whatever word they want to use to describe it, but that's it. I mean, they'll come unglued in a heartbeat and just beat you half to death. Well, the bigger guy, usually they're the sweet people. They're the kind, nice, sweet, you know, tender-hearted people. They're just, you know, they're pretty easy going. It's the little short guys you got to worry about. But his strength was determination. And, you know, there's that old saying, probably heard Bob, I know Bob has said it 1,000 times, it's not the size of the dog in the fight, it's the size of the fight in the dog. And somebody once said, and I thought this was a good quote, the moments that make you are the moments that people around you can't see. And it's basically a fancy way of saying don't judge a book by its cover. Sometimes they just look at the outside and they think, ah, he's nothing. He's a little guy. He can't do nothing. And it's the moments that they don't see that make you. It's the moments where you're willing to go that extra mile. You're willing to push yourself a little bit harder. You're willing to go a little farther, stretch a little bit, study a little harder, study a little bit more. Those are the moments people don't see. That's what makes the difference in your life. It's those things where that tenacity, that willingness, that determination, you can't see that. They don't look at you on the side that says so much determination. It's not a little blue light on the side that says, oh, he's got 80% determination. He ought to be good. No, it doesn't work that way. So people, they looked at Zacchaeus, they saw the height of his stature, and they just dismissed him. They said, oh, you know. But the deal was, he was determined. He had that tenacity. And, you know, you can't just look at that and say, you know, well, what about you? You know, you just want to follow the crowd? You just want to go along with everything? Or are you willing to take that stand, go that extra mile, and say, hey, this is going to cost me. If I speak up now, man, am I willing to do that? Or am I just going to, you know, go with the crowd and stay silent like a sick silent snowstorm? That's what makes the difference. It's moments like that that make the difference in your life. It's moments that they determine who you're going to be. And I got another good quote. Somebody once said, in order to get something you've never had, you've got to be willing to do something that you've never done. I thought that was a good quote. In order to get something that you've never had, you have to be willing to do something that you've never done. That's the truth. If you always do everything that you've always done, you'll always get what you've always had. You gotta change it up. And Zacchaeus, he wasn't going to allow his physical flaws to keep him from attaining a spiritual blessing. So when he saw the crowd was moving along and he couldn't see over the crowd, they were walking. So Luke 19:4 says he ran. He ran ahead of the crowd and got ahead of them. And then he still couldn't see, so he said, well, here's what I'll do. Here's a sycamore tree. I'll climb up in here. Got up in the sycamore tree, and he was able to see him. And about that time, Jesus came down and said, hey, Zacchaeus, come on down here. We're gonna have dinner at your house tonight. And they were like, ooh, they're going to his house. He's a publican. He's a sinner. Why are they going to go to his house? He's nobody. And he said, no, because Jesus has that ability to look in someone, and he sees those moments that made them. He sees those moments that they took when nobody else would. He sees those moments where when everybody else passed, you stepped up and did it. He sees those moments when, like Peter, when he said, well, hey, you know, you've heard about, everyone else has got an opinion on me. What do you guys think about me? And Peter said, thou art the Christ. 12 disciples, only one spoke up. One wasn't afraid to say what was on his mind. Now that can be a blessing or a curse. It depends. Yeah, because you read half a chapter later, he says, I'm going to the cross. And Peter jumps up and says, you're not going to the cross. I won't let you go to the cross, blah, blah, blah. And he said, get thee behind me, Satan. So, you know, that willingness to speak up at any time, just let whatever's on your mind fly, that can be good or bad. It can go both ways. But that's Zacchaeus. That's another character study. And you can learn about his life. The third one I want to look at, and this is a more in-depth one, is Abraham. In Genesis 20, 12 through 27, you find the life of Abraham. And Abraham was a friend. He had a servant's heart. If I were to say I'm going to say he came with a lot of baggage, but one of his biggest flaws was he tried to make everybody happy. And he can't make everybody happy. When it came to telling someone no, he couldn't do it. Now, that's his biggest flaw, in my opinion. And we'll see it through his life. But he gets called out of Ur of the Chaldees, which is obviously modern-day Iraq. I actually looked it up because I was trying to put a physical location, trying to figure out exactly where it was. And I found Babylon, and it's about 100 miles downriver from Babylon, off the Euphrates, I think it is. And God commanded him. He said, hey, you leave your family here, and you head to the promised land. And so he said, okay, well, I'll do that. And he goes and tells his father about it, and his father said, that's a great idea. Let's relocate. Yeah, hey, let's go. Matter of fact, not only am I coming with you, but I'm going to bring a Lot with us too. And he didn't have the guts to tell him no. He didn't speak up. That was one of those moments that it cost him. It cost him time. And we only have so much time. I think there was some, I don't know, philosopher or something. It might have been Buddha. I don't know. But not that I really care what Buddha said, but it was a good quote. He said that what's the most important lesson we have to learn in life? And he said the most important lesson is we think we have time, and we don't have time. Time is the most precious, most valuable thing. We go down to the nursing home, not every weekend now, but we were going every week till the COVID deal took us out last summer. But I saw those people, man, they were getting a blessing, but they know. They're up in their 60s, 70s, 80s, and they're going, hey, you look at them and you think, you know, there was time when they were our age. There was times when I was your age, some of you. but, you know, you've lost the ability to, some of them have lost the ability to walk. Some of them have lost the ability to see. They can barely see. You know, look like two Coke bottles for glasses and barely see a thing. Others, you know, they barely hear. They got the hearing aids in. They still can't hear. But there was a time where, hey, it was just like many of us. And I just think of that. I hope I can use this. Pam's mom, she's just about lost the ability to see. And it's tragic. It's terrible. But I just think, you know, one of these days that might be us. And she, with that, with age comes a loss of independence. Because what you used to be able to just do by yourself, now you need help. And it's sad. It's sad to see that, because I think, well, you know, and it's I guess, good in one way that she still has family. But I think there's people at that nursing home, they got nobody. Last time I preached down there, there was this lady, and I'm drawing a blank on her name, but sweet, sweet lady. And she got up, and she just started crying. And I said, hey, are you okay? And she said, I don't have anybody. There's nobody. And I don't know if she might be suffering somewhat of dementia. I'm not exactly sure. I don't even know if she really knew where she was. But she obviously couldn't tell. Like, if she has family out there, she has no idea where they are. And she just, every time I've seen her down there, she's been just crying. And I said, it's okay. I'm going to give you a hug, okay? And I gave her a hug and said, hey, you know what? Here's the best thing. Jesus Christ will never leave thee nor forsake thee. And it seemed like it helped her. She stopped crying at least, but maybe it was because this weirdo was hugging her. But like, get away from me, freak. Anyway, but it just broke my heart. I just felt so bad for this poor lady. I mean, just, that's just terrible. So anyway, Abraham, he gets out there and he heads up Euphrates River and ends up at a place called Haran in the Old Testament, Charan with a CH in the New Testament. And that's where his father dies. From there he moves on, heads up the Promised Land, but he's still got Lot with him. And this is where you got to... Like the statement, the quote I said earlier, remember, in order to get something that you've never had, you have to be willing to do something that you've never done before. And this is where Abraham, this is where his growth was going to be. He had to do, he wanted something new. So in order to get that, though, he had to do something that he's never done before. So for Abraham, it took some time. He came with Lot. He came with a lot of baggage, and he came with Lot too, but he brought a lot of baggage. Abraham, you find in his life, he had a tendency to lie a lot. He'd go down there, he's heading down to Egypt, and he tells his wife, hey, I got an idea. His will do. We're going in this new place. I'm not really sure what's going on, but here's what I want you to do. I'm afraid they might, you know, decide, well, you know, this is his husband. Let's just kill him off and take his wife. So here's what we'll do. I'll pretend to be your sister. Or you pretend to be my sister. I'll pretend to be your brother, and we'll just go along with that. And about that time, that's where Pharaoh noticed her, and they brought her in. And you can't help but think, if he hadn't lied, it might have just been fine. But it's almost like God exaggerated the thing because he decided to lie about it. He's like, okay, well, let's make a big fuss over this. Because God's really good about teaching people a lesson by just making a problem much bigger than it needed to be because you lied about it. Whereas if you just told the truth and came clean, been fine. So, he lied a lot. He was often afraid of telling the truth. But here's a good thing. He was loyal to a fault. This is where loyalty is good, but this is the loyalty that's hindering him. His loyalty to his father was causing problems. His loyalty to Lot was causing him problems. Why? Because when God was telling him to do one thing, his family said, no, we don't want you to do that. And that's where, there's times where I've seen it. In Christianity, where families will hold you back, you know, God wants you to do something. I know a case right now, this very day, this girl is in an absolute train wreck because mom and dad said, oh, no, no, you need to stay close to us. You need to stay here. And married some moron, complete train wreck, absolute tragedy. I don't even know if that's a word, but... He goes on, and it cost him. It cost him time. It cost him a lot. It cost him a lot. Whereas he just should have just did it God's way. But hindsight's 20/20. It's always easy to look back and say, well, obviously this is the way I should have did it. But at the time, it's not so clear. So that's how we learn. You look back and... but here's the thing. Now that's his flaws. But despite all Abraham's flaws, Abraham had amazing faith. Matter of fact, if you want a good definition of faith, you go to Romans chapter 4 and go down through there, and talks about how Abraham believed God and it was counted unto him for righteousness. And then it says his faith was counted for righteousness. So what's faith? The fact that he believed what God said. That's the definition right there. He believed God, and God counted that to him, his belief in God, his belief in his word, for righteousness. And then he says his faith was counted for righteousness. So faith then is believing what God said. That's just a simple definition, but because I say that because so many times I've watched people try to run over to Hebrews chapter 1, and faith is the substance of things hoped for, the evidence of things not seen, blah, blah, blah. And they're trying to do a barrel roll through a canyon. I'm like, I don't even know what planet are you on? Because I don't even know what you're even trying to say. And they don't know. They're just trying to quote the verse saying, well, that's the definition of faith. It's a definition, I'll give you that, but how about keeping it simple? The old KISS principle. But he had amazing faith. He believed God when nobody else was even willing to give God the time of day. That's what's amazing about old Abraham. He believed God. Now it took him at least 24 years to overcome some major issues that he was dealing with. But once he did, there was no stopping him. And that's what you got to look. That's what you got to look at. I'm just saying, doing that self-examination, looking in our own lives, and saying, now, what's holding me back? Here's a better question: what direction are we even going? Are we going the direction we need to go? Are we doing the things that we need to do? Are we saying the things we need to say? And this can go on and on. But he grew to the place where he was willing to sacrifice the thing that he loved most in life, his only son, in order to please God. But that didn't take place overnight. That took some time. And he had to overcome a lot of obstacles, a lot of things in his life that were holding him back. He had to, one by one, work him out of his life. One by one, get him out of his life. Take him out and say, okay, this thing's got to go. We're trying to do something for God here, and this is in the way. It's not going to work. And that goes for our lives. But Abraham... probably one of the greatest studies that you can look at in his life is he's a great illustration of the lordship relationship. He was not able to do what he needed to do until he submitted himself to God's leadership and said, Lord, thy will be done. That's that lordship relationship. And until that ever happens, and I guess there's different phrases, different terms people use, but one of them is brokenness. A vessel that's broken can only be held together by God for God's use. Once it's broken. Once it's broken, it can't go back to the world. There's no going back. It's broken. And you broke that thing. I always like the story of, I forget who it was, one of the... Spanish conquistadors or whatever those things are. But they went down there and they said they landed somewhere and they were gonna fight something. I don't know, they were fighting a battle or a war. Is it, maybe it's Cortez. I forget who it is. But anyway, they burned the boats. And they said, okay, we're either gonna win this battle or we're gonna die fighting because there's no escape. They burned the boats. There was no escaping. They got an ocean to their back. There's only one way. And I like that type of an attitude where you just choose when it comes to God and the Bible, it's like, okay, it's either this or nothing. It's not, well, it's this, but you know, I got option B, C, D, you got some other options you can fall back on. I like what he said over there in Hebrews 11. He says, they had been mindful. Hebrews 11, verse. There it is, 15, thank you. And truly, if they had been mindful of the country from whence they came out, they might have had opportunity to have returned. But now they desire a better country, that is, an heavenly. Wherefore God is not ashamed to be called their God, for he had prepared for them a city. The most amazing part about that is this is the great Hall of Fame. This is the great heroes of the faith. And he said, when it came to turning back, it never even occurred to them. They never even thought of it. If they had been mindful, the thought never entered their mind of going back. It wasn't an option. It wasn't on the table. They were all in. It's all or nothing. And that was that. And then another option you can look at is, you know, one of the things I'm doing a character study is asking yourself this. Are they a good example or were they a bad example? Because there's both in the Bible. I mean, you have, David is, you know, if you want an example of a good king, David is the standard. But you got other examples in there, probably Ahab, maybe I think the Ahab Jezebel team is probably the greatest examples of a bad king and queen. They were terrible. Another thing you can look at is were they a vessel of honor or were they a vessel of dishonor? So that's the first part of it. And I just threw out a few examples there. But then the second part I want to look at is, what was the process that God used to reveal to them what he had to what process did he use to reveal what he needed to reveal to them? And I use the example of Job, first of all. He used tribulation. Job went through more in 7 days than any of us will ever see in 10 lifetimes. I mean, everything he suffered through, all the agony and the suffering and everything that he went through, I don't see how someone like that come out of something like that sane. I mean, and then to have his three buddies show up and say, hey man, we just came over to minister to you, and you know, on second thought, I think I know what the problem is here, Job. You got a secret sin in your life, don't you? He said, what? What's wrong with you? He said, I feel like I'm about to keel over dead, and you're going to kick me while I'm down? Really? That's the book of Job. And you read through that book of Job, that thing gets vicious, that conversation. It gets worse and worse and worse, and Job gets sarcastic. He gets to the place he's like, what does he say? I know that wisdom shall die with you. In other words, obviously you're the epitome of wisdom. It gets nasty. It's not just a friendly, hey guys, how's it going? You know, just a little palling around with his buddies. Now that thing gets vicious. But God uses this tribulation in Job's life to reveal a hidden layer of self-righteousness that Job didn't know was there. You ever had that happen? I wish I could say that's never happened to me, but sometimes that something will happen in your life, and then as soon as that happens, you're about to say, Lord, why did this happen? What is going on? And about that time, God reminds you of something, and it just slaps you right across the face and says, wow. And it reveals something about your own life that you've forgotten about. Maybe a little bit of pride had crept in. Maybe a little less humility had been in your life. We're all going to struggle with three areas: lust of the flesh, lust of the eyes, and the pride of life. Lust of the flesh and the lust of the eyes, those are usually pretty easy to spot. Pride of life is a little more subtle. It sneaks its way in there. You think, well, I'm doing good. Then you start patting yourself in the back about how good you're doing. Then you realize, man, I'm really doing good. No, what's wrong with that? You're doing good, right? But you're patting yourself in the back, saying, "How look at how good I am." That old pride, man, it comes in. Sneaky. So I'm not going to take all the time on Job, but next guy I want to look at is Samson. Samson was the he-man with the she-weakness. I stole that from Bob. But that was a good thing. His eyes were his weakness. The first words out of his mouth were, if you go back and read it in the book of Judges, "I saw a woman." And ironically, it was these women that cost him his eyes. One of them. Was it Delilah? I think it was Delilah. And then something unexpected happened. He got his eyes put out. He got chained up. And he's sitting there. And they're basically, I don't know if he was down like in a pit or something, but they're down there just making fun of him, laughing at him, mocking him, having a big party all up above. And they brought him out. They said, "Hey, bring Samson out so we can just have a good time, just, you know, making fun of him, just being mean and nasty, what the world does." And while all this was happening, his eyes were put out, so he can't see. He's chained up, so he can't, you know, he can't feel his head. But his hair began to grow again without him realizing it. And without his sight, simply by faith, he believed that God was able to grant him one more prayer request to strengthen himself enough to sacrifice himself by bringing down the house on top of him. And he sacrificed his own life by faith. He didn't realize he was the he-man again because he had lost all his strength. But as his hair began to grow, he gained his strength back, but he didn't know it because he couldn't see. The Bible says we walk by faith, not by sight. That's that faith. He had the faith. That's why he made it into the book of Hebrews 11, or the chapter of Hebrews 11, the Hall of Fame. You're like, Samson? Really? How did he make it in there? By faith. Well, the third guy I want to look at is Jacob. And he was a schemer. He was the guy that he was always plotting and planning, always conniving, manipulating, trying to play the odds, trying to play this person against that person, and always trying to basically take advantage of the situation. That's a schemer. He's a con man. He's always looking for some way to take advantage of someone and just come out on top. And for him to learn the lesson of this, God sent him to his mother's brother, Laban. Is that the right name? Laban? Yeah, okay. Suddenly that seemed wrong. I'm like, I'm probably quoting the wrong name here. But anyway, and Laban was not an amateur schemer. He was an expert schemer. He had been better than his mother, who his mother had passed on her scheming skills to her son. And but she was not as good of a schemer as her brother Laban. So when he went out to Laban thinking, oh, I got this, I'm the schemer, Laban said, no, you're not, son. And he got an education in scheming. And he spent 20 years. And every time he thought he tried to pull one over on him, here comes Laban. He just flips the thing and switches it and switches it around. And oh, no, no, there was never a contract. Oh, my word is my bond until I want to change it. But he just kept sticking it to him. There was always some fine print that he never knew about. There was always some excuse. There was always some reason why everything was his fault. And after 20 years of that, I guess he just finally had enough, and God finally spoke to him and said, you had enough of this? Why don't you head on back home? It's about time to go. You got two wives, you got 11 kids, I think, at the time. I don't think Benjamin was born on the way home. And so he heads on back. And on his way back, this is the famous story over there. I think it's either Genesis 30 or 31. Let me look real quick. The old wrestling match. Jacob 32, 24. And Jacob was left alone. And this is where he divides his family up into the four parents, four women, the two bond servants and the two wives, Leah, Rachel, and then their two handmaids. And he sent them with their children on ahead in four different groups. And Jacob was left alone. And this is the amazing part of all this is, when he got left alone, this is where God took everything away from him so he could get his attention. He had spent his life scheming, spent his life doing this and doing that. To Jacob, it didn't matter who he hurt. To Jacob, it didn't matter if he got one over on his brother. It didn't matter that what he did was underhanded. What he did was questionable. To him, it didn't matter. He came out on top, so it was good. And you can't live that way. Because here's what happens with that. You end up always having to look over your shoulder, wondering who's going to stick it to you, because, hey, you've been sticking it to everyone else your whole life. Now you're paranoid that it's going to come back on you. You reap what you sow. Whatsoever a man soweth, that shall he also reap. You spend your lifetime scheming and taking advantage of people, you're going to be looking over your shoulder because it's coming back. They're going to be taking advantage of you. So he took everything away from them. But here's the amazing part. He wrestled with them. And the funny part is, you're like, well, now, man, he must be a heck of a wrestler because he couldn't beat him. He's wrestling with God here. He's wrestling with the angel of the Lord. And he couldn't win. And the reason is because it was a battle of the wills. And he wasn't going to just, I don't know, beat him into submission, because that's not, you need to willingly, that will, yield your will to God. But it has to be your idea to do it. But he did give him an incentive. He took his, I want to see the Bible word in here. He took his leg out of joint. The hollow of his thigh, that's the word. He touched the hollow of his thigh, and the hollow of Jacob's thigh was out of joint as he wrestled with him. I don't know what that feels like. I'm going to guess. You're a doctor. I'm sure that doesn't feel good. The guys that come in with their thigh out of joint, they're probably not whistling Dixie when they come in, or just zippity-doo-dah, probably didn't come out of their mouth.
No.
Yeah, I would guess it. I'm thinking that's pretty painful. It sounds painful to me. Not seeing it done. Don't want to see it done. Don't want it to happen to me. But that just sounds painful. Very, very, very painful. And I like how this ended here. Verse 31. After his leg comes out of joint, he finally yields. And in verse 31, he says, as he passed over, I guess it's Penuel, I guess how you say that. The sun rose upon him, and look what it says here, and he halted upon his thigh. That's a time of reflection. Because from this point on, he walks with God the rest of his life. After he finally yielded to God, he finally was broken. He yielded to God, and he walked with God the rest of his life. But you think, well, man, he halted upon his thigh. What he's saying is he's limping. And he limped the rest of his life. But he limped with God the rest of his life. And every time he thought about scheming, probably got a little bit of pain in his leg. And thought, yeah, maybe not. I know what I could do. Maybe not. Yeah, I'm going to let that go. And you think, well, this guy left his wallet sitting on it. Maybe not. There was a guy that was I guess he was like a card counter or something. He was a gambler, and he ended up getting saved. And I guess this guy he knew how to just count cards. I don't know anything about gambling. I don't know anything about that, but he knew how to, I don't know, figure odds or something. He, like, mathematically, he could figure all that out. And I guess he could go down to, like, a casino and just clean the place out. And not clean it out, but he'd make money doing that. Like, he was like a professional gambler. He would do that. But he got saved. And he realized, yeah, you know. And he got himself a job working at some construction company. And it was just some labor job. And he's doing this job and he hates it. And he's miserable. And he ends up getting ulcers. He got ulcers, bleeding ulcers. And he had to sit there and, I don't know, drink some kind of drink that helps comfort that, like Sprite or something like that. I'm not sure what it was, but he's sitting there and he got to thinking about his life and he thought, you know, I could go down to the casino down there and just, man, I could make a month's pay in a couple of hours. And about that time, his stomach goes, maybe not. Yeah, I don't think I'm going to do that. And that's what it took. It's just a little bit of pain here and there. And it's sad that it took that. Because what you want is where you just willingly say, Lord, you know what? I love you enough to just choose you over this world. I think of, there was a guy named Uncle John Vassar, and I had heard Dr. Ruckman tell the story of it, and I searched and searched. I finally found some remnants of a quote where he got the story from, but I could not find a story of this guy's life. I tried to find it, but what this guy was doing was he had these like arthritic hands, just real bad arthritis. And he was a Christian, and someone overheard him walking the floor in the middle of the night. And they're like, sounds like he's saying something. Is he praying? What's he doing? And he got up there, and he's rubbing his hands because the arthritis was really just painful for him. He couldn't sleep because of the pain. He's up there, and he's rubbing his hands. And he's saying, oh, my God, how much better this is than sin. Oh, my God, how much better this is than sin. Rubbing those arthritic hands. It's painful. And he's saying, Lord, this is better than sin. Sure better than sin. Now, that's a perspective right there. You spend about 10, 20, 30, 40, 100 years thinking about that, and it'll do you some good. So that's Jacob. So the last thing I want to look at is this is where you get the application. What about their life reminds you of your life, good or bad? You know, like I quoted the verse already, 2 Corinthians 13:5, examine yourselves, whether you be in the faith. Prove your own selves. Know ye not your own selves, how that Jesus Christ is in you, except you be reprobates? Examine yourselves. You're supposed to spend the time examining our lives and looking into our lives and asking ourselves, you know what? Over there in Psalms 51, David prayed that prayer about how he was broken after he committed sin. And God broke him, broke his heart. And he basically came back to God with that brokenness, those five parts of a broken sinner. That brokenness that brings you back to God. And you got to ask yourself this, hey, after I sin, after I blow it, am I broken? Am I broken by my sin? Or do I just go over to John, was it 1 John 1:9? Well, Lord, you know, if we confess our sins, you're faithful and just to forgive us our sins. Okay, I'm putting on the blood. See you later. I'm going to go back to sinning. Just no regret, no nothing. Just move on like nothing happened. I mean, if we look over that, the story of David and Goliath and the courage it took for him to stand up before a whole nation and say, I'm going to go down and take him out. And they went, everyone, even his family, his brothers and sisters are going, or his sisters weren't there, but his brothers were there going, what's the matter? You've been like, you find some wacky tobacco up there on that, watching them sheep up there? What's going on up there? And he said, no, I just, you know, you got to understand, I was out there one time watching the sheep and a lion came up and I took that, God just, you know, God protected me to take out that lion and save the sheep. And, you know, another time, I don't even, maybe it was the same night, it doesn't really, not specific, but it says a lion and a bear, maybe it was just both of them came the same night. Heck of a night, he probably wouldn't sleep that whole rest of the week, probably after that, but he took out a lion and a bear. And he said, you know what, this old Philistine is going to be just like one of them. And he said, well, okay. And people are like, well, how come I can't defeat the Goliath in my life? Have you taken out the lion and the bear first? There's some smaller things that you got to work on first before you can face Goliath. I want to end with this. You know, we're always born, we're born incomplete. When Adam was, after he was sinned, every child after Adam was born incomplete. John 8:44 says, you know, you're of your father the devil, and lust of your father you will do. And people have a tough time with that verse because they'd rather go back and say, oh, no, we're made in the image of God. You know, we're all God's children. Yeah, how many times have you heard that from unsaved people? And that's where you want to memorize the verse, Galatians 3:26. It says, you're all the children of God, comma, by faith in Christ Jesus. It's conditional. Have you put your faith? It's a good opportunity. When you hear someone say, oh, no, we're all God's children. Are you? Are you sure? And then you show them that verse and say that it's a perfect opportunity. It leads right into, have you put your faith in Christ Jesus? They may not like it. I'm sure they won't. They may not want to hear it, but they'll walk away thinking about it. Gives them that opportunity. But the problem is they've forgotten something. When Adam sinned, he lost the image of God. So now his children after that are born in Adam's image. We've heard this. If you guys have all been through discipleship, I'm sure. But he now has the image of a fallen sinner. Romans 5:12. And when I teach discipleship, I just went through this lesson, this part of the lesson this week with a guy. And I always ask him this. I'm like, hey, have you ever lied? And he said, well, yeah. And if, you know. So far, I've not met a liar that said, no, I've never lied. I'm like, you just did. But Anyway. But most people are honest, and they said, well, yeah, I've lied. I said, now, who taught you how to lie? Think about it. You didn't have to take a class on it. You didn't have to learn in the back alleys. No. You're probably 2, 3, 4 years old before you were, and you were lying. Did you take a cookie? No, Daddy. No, Mommy, I didn't. I didn't take a cookie. He got chocolate all over his face. He got crumbs all over the floor. Nope. He's lying through his teeth. She's lying through it. It's probably her, isn't it? She lied. She's stealing cookies over there. No, just kidding. You got a guilty conscience. But think about it. Who taught you how to lie? Have you ever stolen anything? Think about it. This is not confession time. We're not going to have an altar call. But think about it. Have you ever stolen anything? Who taught you how to steal? It just came naturally, didn't it? Lying comes naturally. Why? John 8:44. When he speaketh a lie, he speaketh of his own, for he is a liar and the father of it. That comes from our sinful nature. Now, there's two kinds of people in this world. There's those that are born of a natural birth, sinners by nature. They're born incomplete. They're born insufficient in the eyes of God. And they spend their whole lives feeling that feeling of inadequacy that's not only common to all, but it's there to design. It's designed to force you to face that inadequacy and say, why am I feeling this? And go to a dime store Bible and get you a Bible and open up and say, oh, wait a minute. It says here that I'm complete in Him. And then the second type of people that you see are those who are made complete through a new spiritual birth. The image of God that was lost by Adam was restored through Jesus Christ. And after that, those feelings of inadequacy that you might have are just there to remind you, just like Jacob's limp, just like all the other failures that you find through the Bible, that they're to remind you that, hey, you can't do what you need to do for God through the old nature. If you're going to do something for God, it's got to be done through your new nature. I'll close with this. I want to find it so I don't misquote it. In order to get something that you've never had, you've got to be willing to do something that you've never done before. You want a relationship with God? Something new? You want a deeper relationship with God? You've got to go farther in the Bible than you've ever gone. Deeper in the Bible than you've ever gone. You've got to go a little bit more. A little bit more dedicated. A little bit more consecrated. A little cleaner. A lot cleaner. Not a little cleaner. A lot cleaner. You want what you've never had before. You've got to be willing to do what you've never done before. So that's all I got. And I trust and pray that was a blessing.